Okay. So I came in last week. Someone can maybe fill me in on this conversation, right? But, like, I don't know, maybe I was coming in from Amudim, and I heard Ray Ginsberg saying to someone that he thinks there could be a naturalistic explanation for Or the Mako. Mm. Does this happen?
We were discussing
in Yinjir. Oh, okay, that makes sense. So I figured, might as well talk about it. You know, smartphones are really amazing. Like, especially this week, because I've been just, like, running around. So, like, I'm in places without my Svarim. So, like, literally, I just pull up articles. Yeah. So I pulled up an article by Barry Jachter, where he was dealing with this question. The question wasn't whether the Makot were natural or supernatural phenomenon, because, and I agree with Roy Jachter really much, really I do here, which is that there are explanations that have been given that the Makot were natural phenomena, but I don't find them compelling. But he wanted to deal with two things, which one is, okay, let's outline what theories there could be, and the second question is, let's say they were right, would that bother you? Right, that was the question he wanted to deal with. So, I think we even talked about this a little bit last year, but we'll do it again. If you look on, like I said, you don't have to go farther than the Wikipedia, right? In Wikipedia, they'll summarize some of these theories.
Yeah.
That there was a volcanic explosion and that led to the change in the Nile, either because dirt got into it or some version of whatever and made it red, and that drove the frogs out of it, and once the frogs were out of it, either they attracted bugs, or the bugs, once the frogs died, so the bugs lost their natural predators, and Arov, there's a machloket already in the Midrash, this is like a very old machloket, whether Arov is wild animals, or some sort of flies, or swarms, or something like that, right, meaning, this is already in the Midrash, it's not even like, it's not the one that becomes like dominant, but it's an opinion in the Midrash, it's not like crazy to say that it's some sort of swarm of flies, so if there are no frogs, then there are flies, and then they spread disease, which leads to dever, right, and then, you know, that disease could also lead to boils, or there's diseases going around, or something like that, and then the volcano could lead to some sort of hail, which is actually possible, right? It's, you know, because it sort of changes the localized weather, and it creates, or at least some mimicry of hail, whether it's coming from heaven, I don't know, whatever, right? And then, you know, that can change, you know, the different explanations of how that leads to Arba, like it changes the climate, which leads to Arba, or it destroys some other food, so therefore the locusts that would have been on a few plants now, you know, it would have been spread out sort of evenly amongst the whole country. Now, whatever's left, right, they swarm on, right, because they, right, and then the ash maybe covered the sky and it made it dark, right, and then they even have these Makot Bechorot explanations, which are very odd, which is like, once food started regrowing, it was infected from all that had been happening, and because of the extreme primogeniture in Egypt, they gave the food first to the firstborns, and since it was all you know, diseased, then they come up with all these very fancy schmancy explanations. Now, I agree with the Reish Lakish that you read this and you're like, look, I can't prove that you're wrong, but that is a very,
it's weird,
very, like, everything there is very, very odd, and you have to make a lot of reads, right? You have to assume Arov is one thing, you have to, the Makot Bechorot one is completely bizarre, right? I mean, that's like really, really bizarre as things go, and you have to assume that Dom doesn't mean blood, it means it looks like blood, which, okay, it's not terrible, but there's a lot of assumptions you got to take there, and in textually, you've got to counter-read certain things, right, where, you know, again, the Barad, according to the Psukim, right? Not even, this is not a, right? People always think this is a Midrash. It's not a Midrash. That the fire was mixed with hail, right? That the hail was mixed with fire, right? That is not, now again, you could, volcanic ash, I don't know, whatever, right? But like, that is pshat, that there's actually fire in the hail, right? This is not like some Midrashic buildup. Like, you have other Midrashic buildups, fine. But this is not it. So it is hard textually, and I don't really know what you gain per se by it, except you know, I get it. You really, really, really don't like naturalism. You don't like supernatural miracles, so you come up with an explanation like this. I get it. Fine. but does it bother us? Right? Let's say you bought all this, right? That's really, the question he deals with is, he says, again, and I agree with him, I don't want anyone coming out from here and say, oh look, I'm convinced by the sequence of events as it appears in Wikipedia, or variations thereof, right?
You're getting convinced by something in Wikipedia, there's another
problem. Well, in economy. But that, you know, that's not really the issue. Is okay, but let's say you are convinced, right? You like these explanations, or maybe a more mitigated view. You think that some of them are like this.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Right? Some of them are like this. I don't know, right? People who don't like it, the Rambam does this also, right? The Rambam minimizes miracles. He doesn't get rid of them, he minimizes them, because he has a problem, right, with maximizing miracles, because he doesn't like miracles per se, right? He likes, right? Okay. The theological justification of minimizing miracles. So you have the kfira one, which is just people who say, even if the Bible happened, this is not a miracle. Right? That's not what the Rambam wants. The Rambam, the reason he minimizes miracles, and the Ibn Kaspi and people like that minimize miracles, is because they think fundamentally, and I think I've made this point before from Rai Karmi, is that there's a fundamental machloket rishonim. Is the primary quality we should care about in God his power or his wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Ramban's claim, at least as it appears at the end of Bo, which is anyone who believes there is nature, ein lo chelek b'Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu, again, it's not clear he means it quite that extremely, and he says different things in different places, and Dr. Professor Dean, whatever, Berger, has written an article, a very careful article, on what the Ramban's position actually is holistically. But let's just take that line, if you want to take the Ramban in isolation. The reason, the claim that even when you think there's nature, there's no nature, it's just God pulling the strings, that's very much a belief that what we care about is God's involvement, his power. So any claim that things run on, like by themselves at this point minimizes God's involvement in power.
Mm-hmm.
The Rambam's fundamental category is God's wisdom. God is the planner, the ultimate architect. And if an architect had to keep coming to fix the house every day, you'd say he's a bad architect, a good handyman and a bad architect. Right? A good architect would never have to show up again.
Right.
And therefore, the Rambam wants to minimize miracles, not get rid of them, but his claim that things have to be programmed in advance and things like that is all because he thinks, well, why should God have to change things befoal in the moment,
mm-hmm.
right? Doesn't that minimize the wisdom of his planning? So that's why you'd want to minimize them, right? Because you just have a tendency to say, I don't love miracles, I like nature, right?
Yes.
So you could want to do that. That's not heretical, right? That's taking a different theory of what God's primary expression in this world is, and that's so with that in mind, does it bother us? Would it bother us if it turned out that this was true? Right? That's really the question, right? Meaning, let's say you could somehow get a camera and go back and say, oh, in a Hanami, that's what happened. Right? Would your Amuna now be shaken? And you would say, aha, right, it's all
what caused the volcano though?
Good, and this is Rai Jachter's primary point, which I 100% agree with, and this is necessary for really understanding the Rambam's approach in general, which is, no, obviously not. Because even if this happened, the fact that it happened exactly when it was supposed to,
and that we have no record of anything like happening again.
Correct, and it never happened again. And, as the Psukim note, right, if we just... Right. This is. I'm not getting in now to biblical criticism. Right. I'm assuming. Right. Kimamin. I'm saying if assuming you're a mamin. Right. Which I hope you all are. Right. And you follow the Torah. Could this be matim to an interpretation there? He said, well, look. This sequence of events happened. What evidence is undeniable is that Moshe Rabbeinu predicted exactly when each part of that would happen and was able to warn Paro. Right. Which means that even if it was natural, this particular very unlikely chain of events, which has never happened ever again, happened in exactly this order. Not just in this order, but as Moshe said it, on the day that Moshe said tomorrow at noon that this will happen, it happened. And when he said it stopped.
All right. Take the dust of the earth, throw it up into
correct, air, and that happened exactly the right time, right? It was, in the end of the day, if you wanted to say, okay, God's miracle wasn't that he broke nature, but was that he oriented nature in such a way that it happened at exactly the right time, in vanishingly impossible odds. And that was the way that God brought about the miracles, and he had Moshe be able to predict it and made it so that it would happen to the right people, right? Punish the right people, and it would avoid the cities, right? However you're going to explain that it either avoided Goshen or avoided the Jews. I don't know if they lived inland enough. Whatever you want to do, right? Or flukes and the wind pattern and whatever. You want to say that? Fine. There's nothing theologically wrong with saying that God works through nature in miraculous ways, meaning that he makes it that nature happens at exactly the right time and exactly the right place and exactly the way that it's going to frame it to get across the theological message and the political religious goal that he's trying to do. And I think Ray Jaxter is fundamentally right, which is, am I compelled by this? Mayachus, I am not compelled by this, right? It's one of those things. Occam's razor, in this particular case, does not lead me to the
naturalistic,
to the natural explanation, right? I have to twist and turn into so many, thumb things, right? Like this, like to get the lambdas of how it happened, already it's like, just say it was a miracle and like, it's from a different category. And once you're a mom and you believe in God, you believe God can, if he wants to, break nature. Again, whether you think like the Rambam, he programmed it from the beginning, you think like the Ramban, he's doing it, whatever that means, in the moment, is not the point. Once you think that God can break the rules of nature, however he does that, it's a much easier explanation. But again, the fundamental point is that it doesn't matter. Right? Is that, in the end of the day, the message of the Makkah were that God cared about the Jews and was saving them, that God wanted to teach Paro, the Egyptians, and the Jews that there was a God and that he controlled the world. Right? That lesson can be taught if the miracles are supernatural. It can be taught if he arranged nature in such a very unlikely scenario as to accomplish all his goals, right? Both of those are possible. In the end of the day, what's important to draw from the Makkot is this theological lesson, which is God is involved in the world. God wanted to save the Jews, right? God wants to teach the world that he controls nature. However he goes about that, it doesn't really matter. You want to believe that it was natural? You can. Is it likely? Probably not. But, and this is, again, the point of his article was just to point out that people think, and to be fair, probably a lot of people meant this, right, that the people who want to be motzi, right, midei, the Torah, and say, I don't really believe in the Torah, so they come up with these explanations and say, even if something seemed like a miracle, I can explain it away. There's no God. Mm-hmm. But that is a very shallow understanding. Right? And again, even if I don't find it compelling for the Makkot, because it takes a very strange set of events, there are other miracles where it could be. Right? Meaning, if someone were to tell me that God didn't actually stop the sun and the moon in the time of Yehoshua, because that would have made the earth fly off into oblivion, right? Once you change, you stop the sun, and we know that the sun doesn't actually go around the earth, we go around the sun, and therefore, what would it mean to stop the sun? And therefore, maybe it meant some sort of eclipse. And the miracle was that it happened at exactly the right time to allow it to be light until the end of the day to finish the war. So I'm totally fine, right? Does it bother me? No. Because you know how rare these eclipses happen? Very. You know what the chances are that it happens at exactly this moment? Right?
Very unlikely,
right? And exactly when Yeshua needed it to have light to finish the war in the extra few hours, right? Vanishingly unlikely.
Also, eclipses generally don't last a few hours.
Fine, and this exactly. That's exactly my point. Is if someone said this was a eclipse that happened at exactly the right time for longer than it normally happens, so that Yeshua could win the war. That's also miraculous, right? I don't think a mature understanding of miracles requires us to believe that every miracle is breaking nature as opposed to making sure that nature functions in the unlikely way that is necessary at the moment that we need it, right? I don't think that that's theologically challenging. And that's Ray Jaxter's fundamental point, is that, the lessons of all these miracle stories are that God is involved, God cares, God is taking care of things, God is educating the world. All that stuff can be true. You want to explain it naturalistically? Sometimes it's compelling, sometimes it's not. Mm. Right? Sometimes it's compelling, sometimes it's not. But in the end of the day, that's not the point. Right? That's not the point. If I woke up and made a time machine and went back and discovered that this was all volcanic whatever, right, that set a chain of events into motion, my emunah would not be shaken, ki hu zeh. Right? Instead, I would say, wow, God created an amazing world, right, that he managed to make a series of events happen through nature that led to educating two nations about the nature of God and making the world superpower crumble to its knees and free an enslaved people. Right? Why, in the end of the day, is that something that I wouldn't look at in awe and say, right, Marabu Mazach Hashem? And then that, I think, is the fundamental point, is to not get caught up in these things. Right? They're interesting. They're nice thought experiments. Right? And if, for somebody, providing an actual explanation strengthens their emunah, it's matov. Right? Right? But if you end up saying, oh, and therefore it's not miraculous, right, you've missed the point. Right? You've missed the point that nature itself is a miracle. And aberrations in nature happen, but for them to happen at the right time just shows that there is a being that is in control of this. And again, it's for these purposes, it doesn't matter whether you think like the Rambam and the Ramban that miracles are happening b'shaita or not. That's a different theological machlokas. Okay, so, and the Makot is always a good time, like, to think about these things. And Pesach, also, and I'll end with this, is that, you know, these stories, we have the opportunity to think about them now. Pesach time is really when we should be thinking about these, right? You should not be thinking about more Vortlach, right? You should be thinking of certain key theological, religious messages that really speak to you, and those are the ones you should speak about at the Seder. Right, you should find whatever it is, and you should speak about it at the Seder. When we talk about Kol Marba, Reza, Meshuvah, we're talking about really getting into the story in ways that help you resonate with the messages of the story. Right, and now is as good a time as ever as you're reading through the stories to really think about those broad messages and think, you know, for a few months from now, how you, what you're going to talk about. Okay, that was a little bit.